Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund. Helping you discover the Twin Cities, it is Radio K's Real College Podcast. Online and on the air, my name is Matthew Curtis, and this week we are talking about local legends. People that you know who do what they do better than anyone else, all the while pridefully representing Minnesota and what this state stands for. Patrick Sharkey spends time with a clock connoisseur, Jackie Renzetti meets the woman behind Twins Baseball, and we also hear the word on the street with Stephanie Ryan. And all starts right now on the Real College Podcast. Hello, you listen to the Real College Podcast. My name is Matthew Curtis, and I am joined by
Jackie Renzetti,
Patrick Sharkey,
and today we're talking about icons, specifically icons within the Twin Cities. And Patrick and Jackie have some delightful stories about local legends, as it may be.
Oh yeah.
So, what do you think? What is it about the Twin Cities that kind of like encourages icons?
I think Minneapolis is really conducive to icons. I mean, you look at all the venues we have, like, you know, with just different avenues of culture, whether it's museums or, you know, music venues. I think Minneapolis culture is, I mean, it's definitely kind of a staple of living here, you know, all the different pieces of culture. So, and I kind of get into that in my story too, but I don't know. I think, look at guys like Prince, and we've got real icons who come from the Midwest, and I think it's pretty cool.
I think, and it's possible you can find this like in any state, but having moved around a lot, I've definitely noticed how Minnesota has so much pride for itself. And I think like part of that may have to do with like why we end up with icons that we're all really proud of. Like if you're from Minnesota, we love you, kind of, you know?
Definitely.
And I think if someone is doing something really cool and you're in Minnesota, I feel like Minnesotans are really prone to be like, yeah, that's awesome, like with this organ player and with the man who makes clocks.
Yeah, I think you can have like bigger icons, like I said, like Prince and that kind of thing. But I think there's definitely plenty of room for people who have these little hobbies to kind of, you know, make a name for themselves and kind of do their own thing and still be successful and still bring and provide culture to the cities.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been doing the show for 2.5 years now. And like, you know, I've seen the Twin Cities portrayed in a number of different ways through different people doing different things. And they're all very passionate. And, you know, coming from where you are, Jackie, like, you know, running around a lot and moving, obviously, to Minnesota, it seems like you guys, well, I guess Minnesota, I mean, I'll include myself in it. I think I've been here long enough.
I think you've earned it.
I've definitely adopted the Minnesota pride since moving here.
Absolutely, yeah, because you feel prideful towards it because, you know, we're in the Midwest, and I think there's so much to be said about this small, like, comparatively small city. There really is a lot to enjoy. I mean, in terms of the venues, in terms of the people. Mm-hmm. And I think from there, the pride comes, and from there, you know, you can really embrace these unique people.
Definitely.
Great. So why don't we start talking about Patrick? I mean, what's oh, no, specifically
let's talk
Patrick.
About me. Yeah.
Let's talk about your story, man. What's going on?
So I talked to Jim Fiorentino of Fiorentino's Cuckoo Clock Museum. It's in the North
That's
Loop.
A great name.
It's a great name. Great name. And yeah, so it's kind of this like hidden gem of Minneapolis. It's there's no like signage or anything saying, you know, here's our Cuckoo Clock Museum. It's kind of a, you have to know about it. You know, I think there's been stories done on him, you know, in like Care 11, maybe did a story 4 or 5 years ago. But basically, the way I heard about him is my sister lives in the North Loop. She was running by with her husband, and Jim was, he's a 93-year-old man. I mean, he's just kind of hanging out outside his museum, and I think that's kind of how most people hear about it. It's just kind of crosses path, and he starts talking at you and ends up showing you around the museum. And so my sister knew that I was kind of doing this radio thing, and she said, well, this is kind of something you might, it's kind of cool, check it out. And so I checked it out, hung out with him for like an hour and a half, and it's a pretty, pretty cool place, for sure.
Well, what I like about this guy is that he's doing things that I would never, he's doing the opposite of what I would be doing.
Exactly.
I would not hang out outside my house. I would not talk to strangers, and I would not own a Cuckoo Clock Museum. So he right. clearly is a unique guy, and yeah. he's been doing this for a long time, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's been working with his hands since he was eight. I mean, he's been building radio since he was 8 years old. I mean, you kind of hear in the story, he's a doer. He likes to build stuff and use his hands, and that's very different than me. I didn't really grow up doing that kind of thing too. So, like you, I like him because he's so different from me, and it's just a completely different generation. I mean, it's cuckoo clocks. When was the last time I saw a cuckoo clock was like when I watched Pinocchio.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't see them anymore. So it's kind of cool to kind of see all the work that he puts into them, and he's clearly very, very talented. So it was a lot of fun. Good to talk to him.
I mean, on the discussion of pride, it seems like he is a very prideful man.
Yes.
He is doing what he's doing. He's been doing it on his own. Is that right?
Yep. Yep. It's his thing. It's the warehouse that he built it in. It used to be like his garage door business. Basically emptied that out, remodeled the whole thing himself, then, remodeled all the clocks. And there's more than just clocks in this place, and that's kind of what surprised me, too, is there's swords and, like, different, like, gemstones and paintings and all kinds of cool stuff, and he's basically restored it all, so.
That's a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
I mean, when you hear about it on the face value, it's a guy working with clocks. I mean, obviously it doesn't sound the most interesting, but it's the way that he does it, and like it's the care that he takes into it, and the length that he's been doing it as well. This is the thing to me that makes it pretty interesting.
Yeah. He described it as his life's work, and at the end he kind of questions, is it worth it? Are people going to appreciate this? And I think he believes that they will, and he set up a foundation. So once he passes, no one can touch it. It's going to be there for a long time. So it's kind of a cool deal.
We will now hear Patrick Sharkey's story on Jim Fiorentino and his Cuckoo Clock Museum.
Minneapolis is certainly known for its art and culture. Museums like the Walker give us a great look into contemporary art. We've got Theater Row, which showcases the beautiful Orpheum, Pantages, and State Theaters, as well as Dudley Riggs' brave new workshop. Music venues like First Ave and the Varsity Theater make Minneapolis a must-stop for touring musical acts, both big and small. All of these venues have been staples of Minneapolis culture for decades, and they're important features of making Minnesota an extremely unique place of the Midwest and the rest of the country. But what happens when you stray from the beaten path? Surely there's more to experience than the mainstays of Minneapolis. Well, I have found one of these hidden gems, and I'd like to tell you about it. In the North Loop neighborhood in Minneapolis, a nondescript warehouse butts up to the Mississippi River. If driving by, the building would surely go unnoticed, unless you were a building developer, in which case you might consider this location a perfect spot for another high-rise. Instead, inside the plain-looking building and behind a door simply marked 126, you'd find an aging old man waiting to tell you a story about his collections.
I'm Jim Fiorentino, and what else?
What else? Jim Fiorentino is the proud owner and curator of Fiorentino's Cuckoo Clock Museum. And how does one begin a life surrounded by cuckoo clocks, you might ask?
It was one that my dad used to repair, and keep running for my mother's uncle, and who had some grocery stores and so forth. And so this was kind of a feature in the grocery store with a cuckoo clock. And he used to keep it running for him. Well, one time he brought it home, and it lay there for many, many years without, in disrepair. Well, I'll take it and fix it. And, oh, you're not going to fix it. Well, 300 or 400 cuckoo clocks later, it's been fixed. Turn them into new.
How'd you learn how to do that?
Just self-taught everything. I was building radios when I was 8 years old, and I was always a doer. Had to be doing something all the time.
Now, Jim is a 93-year-old man and can't quite work like he used to, so he gets a lot of help from his family to help maintain the museum. So when the time came for my tour...
Kaylee?
Yes?
Would you show him around a little bit?
I was initially shown around by the newest member of the Fiorentino Museum staff, Kaylee.
So generally he starts in here and he goes through all of the Spanish, French. Over here he's got his Asian pieces, including some Chinese jade, which he loves. It's his favorite piece of the whole thing.
Okay.
Yep. Then the Spanish work over here. Picks, like the Last Supper. It's a lot of fun things.
Wow.
French clocks. That's what these are.
So at this point, I started to quickly realize that Fiorentino's Cuckoo Clock Museum had a lot more than just cuckoo clocks.
And this is my favorite part.
Oh.
The big reveal. So I don't know what Jim told you, but all of the woodwork that you see in here came from him. So he's ordered pieces. He's had help putting them together. But everything that you see, he's added, he's come up with,
Hold
he's
your
designed.
Breath. Make a wish. Count to three. Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look.
He's going to want to show you the rocks over here, Fabulous.
Okay, great.
Well, the rocks are round balls. I used to make those, and I built all the machines. I built a complete lapidary shop with 18-inch diamond saws, vibralaps, and machines for polishing these flat faces like you see here.
We also have American clocks here. We have travel alarm clocks in this case. The last count, we had over 700 clocks in here.
And a little pinball machine
that's
just about 100 years old. And then there's a phonograph over there, that's over 100. This jukebox is from 1932. There's old Edison cylinder phonographs there.
Wow.
There's see that organ there in the middle?
Mm-hmm.
That won the 1889 exposition, first prize at this 1889 exposition in Paris, France. That's the same year the Eiffel Tower was dedicated. That won first prize there. That's a collection of horns that you won't see anywhere except at the museum. And how I ever got a collection of them beyond what the museum in Florida's got, I'll never know. But like I say, you can't take it with you anyhow. I don't know how much other people enjoy this thing, but it's just been my life's work for me. Just living isn't a big deal. With some people, it's a big deal. Everything to keep living, you know, good diet, good this, good that. With me, it was to be able to do something. Keep doing, keep doing, keep doing. A lot of times I kick myself, why did I do it? Well, I just hope what I done it for, that people will appreciate in the future. Everything I love at all. That's my problem.
Anything you want to do it, want to change the world, there's nothing to it.
For pictures of the Fiorentino Cuckoo Clock Museum and information on how to visit the museum yourself, visit RadioK.org. For the Real College Podcast, I'm Patrick Sharkey.
Hey, this is Stephanie Ryan, a volunteer here at Radio K, and I'm covering the Word on the Street this week, which will let you know what events you should be at this week. Starting off this Tuesday, October 6th, we have UK producer Chad Valley, aka Hugo Manuel, performing at the Turf Club. Chad Valley just released his second LP last week called Entirely New Blue. Here's a tune off that album called True.
You gave me time, but I want more. It's not the same when I'm on the floor. The second chance is just in sight. It's not too late to get it right, yeah. But every time I sing, I remember about the way you've forgotten me. And
next up, we have Las Vegas native Shamir performing this Wednesday, October 7th at First Avenue. Shamir is a 20-year-old musician who has some music for everyone's taste. Some of his song genres include soul, R&B, house, disco, rap, and pop. He just released his first LP this year called Ratchet. Here's a song off that album called In for the Kill.
Yeah, you know that I got this is me on the regular, so you know. This is me on the regular, so you know.
Don't try me, I'm not a free sample. Step to me.
coming this Thursday, October 8th, we have Out, presented by Radio K, performing at First Avenue. This Montreal band released their first album, More Than Any Other Day, in 2014. Later, they released their second album, Sun Coming Down. Here's a piece from their new album called Men for Miles. On Friday, October 9th, we have Titus Andronicus performing over at the Triple Rock Social Club. You may have heard one of their four albums that followed their first ever live performance in 2005. Their fourth album was just released this past July, called The Most Lamentable Tragedy. Considered a punk rock or indie rock band, here's a new tune off of their latest album called Dimed Out. Rounding out this week, we have Churches playing on Saturday, October 10th at Midnight Club. Their debut album, The Bones of What You Believe, came out in 2013, selling over 500,000 albums worldwide. Their second LP, Every Open Eye, was released on September 25th of this year. Here's a track from that album called Leave a Trace. That's it for this week's Word on the Street, brought to you by Radio K. Again, I'm Stephanie Ryan. Thanks for tuning in.
Okay, now we're back with the Real College Podcast. It's like we never even left. My name is Matthew Curtis.
Patrick Sharkey, still here.
I'm Jackie Ranzetti.
And Jackie, we're going to talk about your story now. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, great. We're talking about Sue Nelson, and she's clearly a special lady. What's going on with her?
Yeah, so she's been playing the organ for the Twins team for 17 years now. And you can literally just go up to her and meet her and talk with her. She plays, like, in this bar. It's up on the third level. There's this bar, and she's just right there. And people can go take pictures and talk with her when she's not playing.
I mean, like, I was very surprised to know that it was a real person doing it. Because it doesn't sound like... There's no, like, human element that seems very, like, apparent, you know? It's, no one's, like, screaming and no one's, like, singing or anything. So it seems like you could just, like, press a button and, like, the music would just play.
Right. Yeah, I think, like, a lot of people do think that it could be a button. And I think, like, the people that, like, know that, like, Sue is there, they, like, know and they will go talk to her. And I feel like it's this whole other kind of aspect of Target Field that only those who know Sue know about. And those who don't know about Sue just kind of wonder about it. Like, oh, there's an organ, but I don't know where it's coming from. So it was interesting to kind of see that, like, dichotomy between people who didn't really know, didn't really care, and the people who knew, like, they cared.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the thing about this that is definitely worth noting is that, like, it's not about her, you know? It really, like, she's doing it for the fans and for the stadium. Like, it's not, she's not like, oh, it's the Sue Nelson show, you know? Mm-mm. She's very, like, it's almost selfless in a way. Like, she's, like, serving the crowd in this way.
Yeah, she really views it as, like, cheerleading. That's really what she wants it to be. She really just kind of wants to contribute to the atmosphere and help cheer on the twins.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's clear that she's part of the twins' family. I mean, she's been there for 17 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's I'm assuming she's a fan.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, not just an employee, but...
It'd be terrible if she hated baseball.
Yeah, so I think that's cool. I think that, you know, the history there... kind of just adds to the whole thing in general.
She's an institution.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, are organ players common? Does every stadium do this?
No, definitely not. It's hard to put a number on it, but we're definitely one of the very few stadiums that still has a real person behind the organ. And something that I heard kind of just from different people there was that, like, not only are we one of the few that have a real person, but we're one of the few where that person is accessible. Like, I heard someone telling me that there's one in Michigan, but they couldn't even find the organ, and they were looking, but they couldn't find them, and they were just so happy to be at Target Field, where it's just so friendly. Like, you could just talk with everyone there and talk with Sue.
I think that's definitely representative of the actual Minnesotan mentality
and
the culture as well. Like, people are just want to talk to people, like, regardless of who they are or where they're at and, like, their status and things like that. We'll now hear Jackie Renzetti's story on Sue Nelson, the organ player for the Twins, and we'll see how that goes.
It's a warm summer evening in Minneapolis, and hundreds of Twins fans are ready for a night of baseball. Looking around Target Field, all of the traditional elements are present. $1 hot dogs and cotton candy, the drunken chatter and the booming pregame announcements. As families take pictures with Snoopy statues and kids prepare to catch a foul ball, there's yet another essential piece of the atmosphere that's not quite as visible.
Have you ever noticed the organ music during the games?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
Do you know where it comes from?
I never knew if it was a real person or not. Yeah, personally.
That was Bill and his son Randy, who aren't alone in knowing just where the organ comes from. Yet, up on the third level, just above home plate, people gather to watch and take pictures as Sue Nelson energizes the entire crowd with a 1977 Yamaha organ. Since the 1940s, the organ has played an integral role in the baseball experience. While today you can hear the organ at almost any stadium, you're usually hearing a recording. But Target Field remains one of the few places where you can catch a live rendition of tunes like Take Me Out to the Ball Game. For Craig Brewer, watching Sue Nelson play was a priority for that night's game.
The organs are part of the history of the game, playing the organs in between innings, walk-up music, all of that is from organs historically, but now it's cuts from, I don't know, the radio or some computerized thing, and we've replaced the people and the sound of the organ. So there's something just more authentic and genuine about it. I'm blown away, and I'm impressed, and I'm thrilled she's out here.
Sue said that throughout her 17 years playing for the Twins, she continues to meet people that are surprised to see that she exists.
A lot of people say, oh, I just thought it was a button that somebody pushed. But then other people say, well, I thought it was an organ, but I can't believe that we can talk to you, we can touch you.
Sue began playing piano as a kid and picked up organ when she was 15. She got her start in sports with the Minnesota North Stars with her first game on March 18, 1981. And yes, she really does remember the exact date. In 1999, she took over for Randy Newman for the Twins. Whether people seek her out like Craig Brewer did, or they're just learning about her for the first time, Sue said that visitors are one of the best parts of the job.
I love to have visitors, and I always get the kids to come and stand in front of the window. It's really fabulous for people, for visiting with people.
In addition to visitors, Sue also gets a lot of requests. She said that one of the most popular ones is the Addams Family theme song.
Oh, this one lady is so funny. She always asks for the meatball song. And that's a Hungarian, you know, those kind of things that people like to clap to. I don't care what gets them clapping. I'm happy to do it.
For Sue, the job is more about keeping the crowd engaged rather than the technicalities of music.
Well, I was a cheerleader. I was a cheerleader in high school, and I just always think that makes a difference. Because what I like to do is to get people to put their hands together, and that's what this job is. It's not that much music. It's cheerleading, which is really different. And I like sports, just really like sports. I'd rather be at a baseball or a hockey game than most anything else.
I'm wondering what it's like when you notice that, like, you're playing, you just got the crowd, you know, going.
Oh, it's so fabulous, and that happens. We have the best fans. I really think we do. They're just fantastic. And of course, at the beginning, you know, everybody's just getting settled in there. You know, it takes a little, unless we do something good in the first inning. And it really is exciting. And you can hear it from all, you know, sitting here in the window, I can hear it from all around, you know.
Wow.
It is fun to get people going.
Similar to her interest in cheerleading, Sue said her love for baseball goes back to childhood.
I remember when I was really little on the farm in southern Minnesota, I would always want to go and visit my grandpa and grandma. And my parents thought, oh, isn't that nice? She's such a nice granddaughter. I really wanted to go there because they had the only TV in the area and I could watch baseball on their TV.
Just as people of all ages enjoy a baseball game, the tradition of the live organ continues to matter to people across generations. Played baseball for years. The tradition of the live organ continues to matter to people across generations, like father and son Bill and Ryan.
Not very many people that know how to play an organ anymore. Kind of a lost art.
Knowing there's a person behind it all gives you a different perspective on it. I mean, it's not just something, they don't just press a button, you know, they have an actual person playing the music for them every time. It's cool, you know?
There's thought put into it.
Yeah. I mean, when they play it, there's a reason they're playing it, and yeah. It's cool to me.
I'm Jackie Renzetti with Real College Podcast.
That concludes this week's Real College Podcast. Thank you to Jackie Renzetti, Patrick Sharkey, and Stephanie Ryan for contributing to this week's show. Our producers are Aaron Bolton, Max Fuller, Patrick Sharkey, and Jackie Renzetti. You can find us on RadioK.org, PRX, and iTunes, and on Sundays at 6 p.m. on Radio K. To play us out, here is Ord with the album Sun Coming Down. This track is called Celebration, and you can find a full review on RadioK.org. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and thank you for listening.
Suit and tie fits okay. Don't take much to make my day. Celebration, 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 celebration. Everyone's eating just more than enough. A bottle of something, a hand for your glove. Celebration, celebration, celebration. Celebration! In here it is the perfect temperature. So figure it out, then bring it on in. There's a group here, you'll fit right in. Celebration! 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 Open it up, ooh, just enough to fill my cup. Celebration, 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 yup! We'll be right back. Let's take